You're listening to Admitting Diagnosis, the Journal Watch podcast for the week ending October 24th. I'm Joe Elia. Admitting Diagnosis offers the week's essential medical news plus an interview. This week, we talk about the consequences of midlife smoking. If you'd like to comment, please call 617-440-4374. Links for everything are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. All right. Here are the week's medical headlines. Smokers, even young ones, should get the pneumococcal vaccine. Guidelines for type 2 diabetes updated. Ditto for guidelines on GERD. Lastly, heart failure isn't good for your hips either. Okay, some details, starting with smokers. The Centers for Disease Control hasn't announced it officially yet, but the Associated Press reported last week that the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices voted to recommend that all smokers under 65 should receive the pneumococcal vaccine. Get those needles ready. There are some 30 million eligible smokers out there. Next, diabetes. The American Diabetes Association and its European cousin have updated guidelines for type 2 diabetes, first issued in 2006. The updates recommend using either exenatide or pioglitazone in patients with hazardous jobs. Rosiglitazone is no longer recommended because of its increased risks for MI. The guidelines continue to recommend lifestyle intervention and metformin as first treatments at diagnosis and maintaining the patient's hemoglobin A1C level under 7%. Next, GERD guidelines. The AGA has just released guidelines on managing gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD. The guidelines say that proton pump inhibitors are more effective than histamine receptor antagonists and that PPIs are preferable to anti-reflux surgery unless the patient can't tolerate the drugs. The guidelines warn that reflux-associated chest pain should be investigated carefully lest it be mistaken for cardiac disease. And finally, in this week's news, patients with heart failure seem much more likely to sustain orthopedic fractures, especially those of the hip. The authors of the study published in Circulation speculate that the cause could be the elevated aldosterone levels associated with heart failure, which might promote calcium excretion. They suggest screening patients with heart failure for osteoporosis. That's the week's news. This week's interview concerns a study published last week on cigarette smoking in middle age and its effects in later life. Last week, the Archives of Internal Medicine published two pieces of research about smoking. One about hospital smoking cessation programs, and the other was conducted in Finland over a 26-year period. That research followed almost 1,700 middle-aged men, average age about 48, who were apparently healthy at baseline, when their cardiovascular risk factors and smoking habits were assessed. By follow-up, as I said, 26 years later, the men, the survivors were now in their early 70s, who had been smoking heavily during their middle age, lived an average 10 years less than those who had never smoked. No surprises, right? But it has implications for counseling your patients, because in addition to a longer life, the never smokers had a much better quality of life in later years than did their surviving smokers. We've asked Dr. Otto Strandberg, the paper's first author, to talk with us about his work. Dr. Strandberg is a general practitioner and does his research in the Department of Medicine at the University of Helsinki. Welcome, Dr. Strandberg.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Well, what got you interested in this research?
As a general practitioner, I've been working with my patients, trying to lower the different cardiovascular risk factors. And as I heard about a study that's been going on for so many years, looking at the impact of these risk factors on health-related quality of life. In later years, I got involved in this study, and it's been a very interesting 5 years looking at the impact of things like cholesterol, weight gain, alcohol consumption, and now smoking on these men's later lives.
I see. I noticed that, well, you're a general practitioner, and therefore you're probably very busy, and I noticed that the observation period for this cohort of men ended about 8 years ago. So what took so long for the to bring this paper to publication? Was it all data analysis? And
That's correct. I'm working on this part-time, so it's been much slower than I would like it to be. The study is still going on, and we are sending these men questionnaires every year now, including the RUND or short form 36 that assesses their health related quality of life. We're doing this yearly, and also looking at the mortality rates yearly. But the publication rate is really, really slow, working part time. So yes. unfortunately, we are eight years late. But it's coming slowly up, and we have certainly years of work ahead us.
So the work continues then, and you're sending yes. these the RAND was it the 36 question short form.
Yes, that's correct.
I see, and this evaluates their physical abilities as well as their medical the general medical condition.
Yes, the short form 36 is the most widely used health related quality of life instrument used in the world, and it's a generic instrument and a very broad instrument in the sense that it has 36 questions. And it assesses different areas of life, such as the physical functioning, but also the social aspects and mental aspects of life as well. And this health-related quality of life has become a very important endpoint in research as well as in clinical practice nowadays, and, because it has this impact on the health policies as well. Basically, it means what the patient feels, and that can be quite different from what the doctor might think that the patient's quality of life is.
Or what the laboratory measures.
Yes.
The editorialist in that issue titles his piece, "Live Fast, Die Young, Leave a Good-Looking Corpse." And have you noticed that smokers tell you that they'd rather have a shorter life but a happier one because they can smoke?
Yes, I think this is quite typical an attitude for the smokers to declare that they would rather give up from the bad end of life, as one patient told me, to live for the full life now, and because everybody dies someday, so it doesn't, especially for the younger smokers, it doesn't mean that much if you give the bad years away from the end of the life. The findings that we have here they show that besides that the smokers, heavy smokers, especially those who smoked more than a pack a year, they had a 10-year shorter lifespan, and on top of that, the quality of life and especially the physical sides of the quality of life was much worse than those who never had smoked.
You said a pack a year. You meant a pack a day, right?
A pack a day. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So these people have a shorter life as well, but they think they will be happy, but it turns out that they have a shorter life, but a sicker one.
Yes. The mortality rate in our study was quite similar to that found in previous studies, for instance, the British doctors' studies, so that was approximately 10 years for those smoking more than a pack a day. On top of that, when we looked at the physical functioning with the short form 36 questions, which includes such questions as how are you able to do activities in your daily life, such as lifting heavy objects, carrying groceries, climbing stairs, walking a mile or more, walking a block or more, bathing and dressing. And difference that we found in this was really staggering, was about 14 points on the short form 36 scale, and that is really an enormous decline in their physical health. And when we looked at the same change in the general population, male population, we found it to be the about the same decline as you would have when you have your age from 70 to 80 years. So on top of losing 10 years in the lifespan, those who survived to the average age of 73, their physical functioning was on the level of those who were 10 years older.
Those are the people who were heavy smokers and somehow survived out to about 73 then.
That's correct, yes.
What do you say to your patients when you talk with them? You're a general practitioner, and how could you help a clinician? You're probably very strong about counseling against smoking, but what do you say to your patients, and what could any clinician say to a patient to make them stop?
I think this message that we have in our study may not be very attractive for the younger smoker. Most people start in their adolescence, and as we can see in our study, from the year they were 48 years old to the age when they were average 73 years old, 70% of them had stopped smoking. So it's not a dead-end zone there. You can actually have an effect, and when you ask the people about their smoking, you can see that most people are aware that smoking is hazardous for their health. And also, when you ask, most of them are thinking about quitting. But fact that they not only risk dying earlier, and not only the risk of some disease that they may think that can be cured, they could realize that the smoking is in their lives every day. It is in the way they can walk, and in the way they can climb the stairs and go to the shop. And I think this might be an extra new message for them to help them quit smoking. But as I said, I think this is only valuable for the aging smoker, and not so much for the younger smoker groups. And we have to find some other measures for the young ones.
So a clinician talking with his patients has to deal both with the long-term effect of smoking, as well as the strong addictive nature of nicotine. How do you get your patients out of that loop?
Yes, the nicotine addiction is very strong, and it is also mirrored here in our study by the fact that in spite of their declining health, so many men still kept on smoking. I personally, in my practice, I have started using the drug indicated for quitting tobacco, as well as the nicotine patches, and I think especially the varenicline medication is quite good in my view. But I think the most important thing is to have the patient motivated, because it's still comes down to the motivation after the medication is gone anyhow. So you have to just sort of find the right strings to pull, not to push too hard and not to annoy the patient, but to find the right way for him or her to be motivated and to look beyond that day to the next years of his life.
Well, I'm going to give this article to my son, who smokes.
And I have read it to my son also.
You have, I see.
He's 17, so.
Mine is 30, and he's reaching that point.
Okay.
Or has already reached the point, I think, where it would really behoove him to stop.
That's the right time for him now.
Yes,
that's for sure.
As you say in your paper, the best strategy is never to start smoking.
We talk about the obesity epidemic in the Western world, but when we look at the smoking rates in the developing countries, there's a huge smoking epidemic going on, especially in the Far East, where the male population is 60-70% are smokers.
Yes.
And when you think of the population there, the that's really that's where the market is right now.
All right, Dr. Strandberg, thank you so much for spending the time with us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Finally this week, who knew that you could generate X-rays just by unwinding adhesive tape? There's a fascinating video on the British journal Nature's website showing how it's done and how to get a radiograph of, say, your finger. A warning, the effect only works in vacuums, so don't go dismantling the radiology department yet. If you'd like to leave a comment on this week's podcast, call 617-440-4374. Links for all stories are available at podcasts.jwatch.org, where you will also find a collection of previous editions. Join us next week, won't you? Thank you so much for listening. For the Journal Watch podcast, I'm Joe Elia.